Okay, Clinton, are you back?
Yes, sir.
Do you have the Mark Derry article real handy?
Real handy. Yeah, let's see. QAnon. Let me just put it in here. Close reading.
Oh, yeah, QAnon. Okay, post that so we can look at it for 20 minutes.
There we go.
Very good.
Right on.
Mark Derry-ary-ary-o.
That was my mother, by the way, that was calling.
How is she?
What's her problem?
What's her problem?
I think my mother's problem is dementia, but she's coping. She's coping.
All right. Okay. Where do you think we're at? Chance's use of the word research is instructive. Was it before? I remember we got.
I think we're maybe a little past that.
Yeah, because we get past the book title, where he's dealing with his shock and his colleagues are all fucked up. So
the hermeneutics of suspicion is more than an analytical method.
Yeah,
I think we're there.
Okay, you can read.
The hermeneutics of suspicion is more than an analytical method, argues literary theorist Rita Felsky. It's a state of mind. Quote, this entrenching, this entrenching of suspicion intensifies the impulse to decipher and decode, end quote. There we go. She writes in The Limits of Critique, 2015, quote, the suspicious person is sharp-eyed and hyper-alert, mistrustful of appearances, fearful of being duped, always on the lookout for concealed threats and discreditable motives. In short, more suspicion means ever more interpretation, end quote. Conspiracism is what happens when the hermeneutics of suspicion escape the page into the wild. The world is a text. Anything can be a sign, a symbol, disinformation, propaganda, psyops, a subliminal message, evidence of dark designs and covert operations. Where you and I see a stylized arrowhead in the logo of the Arrowhead Town Center Mall in Glendale, Arizona, Chansley sees pedophile code as the orthographically challenged sign he waved at the 2020 Trump event proclaimed, quote, this symbol says that the Arrowhead Mall is a safe haven for certain people with certain tastes, in particular, boy love, end quote. He tells this to a TV crew, adding with flawless comic timing, quote, that's not just me talking out of my rear end here, end quote. All globalist schemes are, quote, hidden in plain sight, end quote. You've got to, quote, read between the lines, end quote, he instructs the viewing audience. Look for, quote, certain code words like pasta or pizza, and if the pizza has like a devil horns or something, that's something to watch out for, okay, end quote. The sun winks off the upswept horns on his headdress. What's your name here?
Okay, I say he's got a Mark, he's got a valid criticism there, if that is accurate.
Well, yeah, I remember when all this was fucking going on. Basically, that one pizza place, the pinball arcade place in Washington, D.C., lots of people who went there had really fucked up weird Instagram accounts full of really weird fucking art and really weird photographs
yeah.
that are super sexual of them, like jizzing pizza or being naked with pizza on them or like just the most ridiculous stuff and like hashtags full of pizza and there were recordings of weird kinky BDSM sort of themed dance orgies that happened late at night where it was like a kids arcade during the day, and so there was like
yeah.
you know, photos of like people tied to the ping pong tables, you know, like shit like this, right? So it's like this particular restaurant had a very weird double life and a very weird clientele, like Batman and Robin tier schizophrenia. No, Batman and Bruce Wayne. I mean, like, by day, it's a mild-mannered pizza place and pinball arcade, but
yeah.
by night, it's a weird, kinky pizza fetish club for you know, government, for federal government workers with disposable cash and sadistic fetishes, right? That was like the place that people were overanalyzing, and that's where the dude showed up with the assault rifle looking to save kids from the basement or whatever the fuck, right?
Yes.
So, and then there was all the shit in the, all the inexplicable codes hidden in the John Podesta emails about people saying shit like, oh, I found your pizza-related napkin here. And it's like, well, what the fuck's a pizza-related napkin, right? Like, you know, like all sorts of weird sentences that didn't make sense that were talking about pizza and hot dogs and pasta and shit. And people were trying to break the code, like, what the fuck are they actually talking about? That they need to use a code, but they do it so shitty and obviously that, like, you know they're talking about something, right? Yeah, so nothing ever really... All right, there were... FBI, official FBI documents warning about pedophile codes involving, like, spiral triangle shapes. Like, think of a spiral, but instead it's like a triangle that loops over itself with the edges, right? Like, actual government-issued, FBI-issued warnings about iconography they're regarding that were pushed around a lot, right? So that was the online environment, the crazy paranoia that was going on when the QAnon shaman would have been talking about this stuff. And I mean, I feel like Mark Derry here is using this book by Rita Felsky and this true phenomenon it's literally psychosis when you start interpreting the world as you would a book. You know, I had a guy, one time I was at one of my favorite bar downtown, and it was close to last call, and a dude had come in and gone upstairs, who had been like pacing around really awkwardly out front, and we were all weirded out by him, and he went upstairs and was like haunting outside the bathrooms, kind of. And I went up there, and he started like telling me, "Oh, I had to come here, man. Like I was following the signs, man. All day I've been seeing things that are pointing to this place to come here." And I was like, "Signs? Like what?" And he points at one of the taps on the bar, which has a local micro brewer's logo on it. And he's like, "That, I see that everywhere." And now he's, and I'm like, "Yeah, that's a beer that's advertised all over town. And you're going to see it. Like lots of bars have got that sign on it, man. Like, so you followed a microbrewer's logo to a bar that happened to have that beer on tap. That's great." But he was like, literally like, out of it, and I had to like talk him down and talk him out of the restaurant and get him a glass of water and all this shit, right?
Yikes.
Yeah, it was interesting, but sure, so that happens. It happens all the fucking time, sure. But there's a very specific context in which pizza and pasta codes referring to child the molestation and sex trafficking happened, and if you don't know that, especially since the subreddit where it all took place, the Donald, has been deleted, and now you can't even, like, one of the most historical, like, important historical events all was completely documented on Reddit, and then they deleted the subreddit, so you can't research even how the fuck Donald Trump became president. And if I hadn't been there every day, reading it every day, to see it, there'd be no way for me to go back in the, and see what it was all about. I'm lucky that I saw it fucking unfold as it happened, and I took so many screenshots, and I saved so many pages, right? I've got my own little archive, but had I known they would just delete the whole fucking thing, I would have saved everything, for fuck's sake, right? Yeah, so just like every other mainstream media account of what the fuck happened in 2016, this one is egregiously lacking the context and just calling people crazy for being slightly concerned about weird satanic artwork and kinky bondage kids pinball pizza places. Like, what the fuck was that? Maybe it wasn't as, like, it probably wasn't as, like, terrifying as the worst imaginings of the paranoid people who were investigating this shit were. If it wasn't, it's still pretty fucking weird, and just the idea that, yeah, rich people do crazy, weird, yeah, kinky sex shit all the time, and some of them are into, you know, Satanism, because it gets them off. Maybe explaining that a little more, everyone's super embarrassed about it, obviously, or something like this. We don't want to talk about Hollywood Babylon, so instead we'll just call everyone who is at least raising their eyebrow about this or talking about it the victim of fake news and Russian propaganda, right?
Yeah.
Oh, well. So, that's what I got.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the reaction is natural. It's just this thing where, you know, and it reminds me of the way I kind of look at it in retrospect is, you know, just presuming that the worst imaginings are not true. The way I look at it in retrospect is just one of these things of, you know, like John Ronson came out with that book, So You've Been Publicly Shamed, you know, like this had become a thing that was not just a thing happening, but a thing that had been recognized as happening in the culture and had been written about, and it was a whole phenomenon of the pile-on. Someone tweets something
mm-hmm.
unsavory, and then instead of just getting a couple of their friends being like, oh, that's gross, why'd you say that, you get the whole, all of Twitter and
the national news treatment,
your social media posts are disgusting. So it's just like, that's all that happens. They're like, hey, it turns out the guy who runs this kid's restaurant has a whole lot of really creepy shit on his social media.
Yeah.
You know, and then he began to be publicly shamed by the exact same snowball effect that affected all these other people, except this guy happened to have high-level political connections. So that managed to reverse the social media shaming onto the people who thought there was anything wrong with those creepy, creepy-ass posts.
Oh, yeah, and then his name just happens to be James Alephantis, which sounds like J'aime l'enfant, which is I love kids.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then that turns into this thing where people are like, can you believe that these people are so crazy, they're saying that his name really means I love kids? It's like, no, people are noticing a remarkable fucking coincidence that the guy's suspected of being a kid lover and his name kind of sounds like I love kids. That's worth noting.
Who's name again, Clinton? Who's
James
again?
James Alephantis. Yeah, so that's again, so now we're talking, so now here's Mark Derry talking about, man, this QAnon guy sure is crazy, and it's like, well, no, this was exactly what he was looking at, okay? That's why he's saying this shit. Like, it might be crazy, sure, but like, it's not without fucking cause. Okay, I'll keep going here in this thing here. Rita Felsky, her book One Mind at a Time begins with a quote from a 1961 speech by President Kennedy. Quote, "For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence." End quote. Sorry, that's my best Kennedy impression. I suppose I should. I should try to do Mayor Quimby maybe next time. Okay.
Exactly.
Chowda, say it, Frenchie. Okay. The Cold War was on, and Kennedy was conjuring the specter of Soviet expansion. But Chansley, adept at the hermeneutics of suspicion, reads between the lines. Quote, "The deep state is the system which Kennedy spoke of," end quote, he writes, "a conspiracy marshaling, quote, vast human and material resources into building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine," end quote. Dealey Plaza is conspiracism's primal scene. The assassination of JFK and the Warren Report's suspiciously tidy verdict that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone, regarded by many as a foregone conclusion intended to quell conspiracy theories, marked a beginning of baby boomers' loss of faith in authorities and institutions. Quote, 2020 really begins to slouch towards us in 1963. You know what I'm saying? End quote. Miller told a crowd of COVID skeptics, anti-vaxxers, and authority truthers at a rally in May of this year. It really starts sort of in Dallas on November 22nd, right? It is the conspiracy, of course. Chanley's deep state. JFK committed, quote, crimes against that network, that syndicate, and its interests, says Miller. That got him killed. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. would probably agree. He believes that both his father and uncle were victims of conspiracies. Quote, the assassination left an emptiness that made everything plausible, made us susceptible to the most incredible ideas and fantasies, Don DeLillo told a BBC interviewer. Riffing on Libra, his novel about those 6 seconds in Dallas, DeLillo writes, quote, we couldn't seem to find out what happened, even on the most basic level. How many gunmen? How many shots? How many wounds in the president's body? There was no coherent reality we could analyze and study. So we became a little paranoid. We developed a sense of the secret manipulation of history. Documents lost or destroyed. Official records sealed for 50 years. A number of very suspicious murders and suicides. Since Dallas, we see conspiracy everywhere. End quote. Trump, our first conspiracist president, sailed into office on a wave of conspiracist bilge. Tellingly, JFK was the ghost at the Burger King buffet of the Trump presidency. What?
Tellingly, read that line again?
I lost myself. I don't even. Tellingly, JFK was the ghost at the Burger King buffet of the Trump presidency. Materializing during
the
2020.
I didn't know they had a buffet at Burger King.
I thought it would be McDonald's at least. Why Burger King? Okay.
Tellingly, what if in that song that I played was he said that?
Yeah, rock and roll
was
Burger
King.
King.
Better or worse?
You're testing? I forget.
Okay, I'll find out.
Yeah, do it. Okay. Telling me JFK was the ghost at the Burger King buffet of the Trump presidency, materializing during the 2016 campaign when Trump insinuated, citing a passionately fabricated story in the National Enquirer, that his rival Ted Cruz's father was with Oswald shortly before he killed Kennedy, and thus somehow involved in the assassination. In 2017... Okay, now I'm just laughing about the Ted Cruz, what was it? He was the, who's
Zodiac.
The Zodiac Killer. I kept wanting to say Gemini Killer, but that's something else. Yeah, the Zodiac Killer. Okay. Yeah. That was the fucking best. Okay. Into 2017, a year into Trump's presidency, he threw the conspiracists in his base a bone by ordering National Archives to release documents related to JFK's assassination. Trump is out of office, but Trumpism marches on, and with it, the conspiratorial obsession with the shots that ended Camelot. On November 2nd, QAnon cultists gathered in Dealey Plaza to await the second coming of JFK Jr., whose death in 99 is no impediment in their minds to him becoming Trump's running mate in 2024 when the Orange One has another go at the presidency. That kind of shit's a cheap shot. The Orange One. It's just, it's when you're trying to write a fucking opinion piece, I feel like that the biggest flaw in all of these is that, like, these writers don't even have these critics don't have, you know, enough faith in their messaging to not also then take cheap shots too.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't know.
Well, you know, he's trying to get attention, and Mark Derry's very good at colloquially insulting people.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
That's known for.
Oh, okay. Well, the Orange One's hardly fucking original, nor... Right? Like, I mean, if the Wall Street Journal called Elizabeth Warren Pocahontas, it would ring just as fucking stupid, right? You're like, come on, man. But, whatever. In 1958...
Yeah, let me respond here. There's, you know, taking Chansley, these odd characters, and make them symptomatic of Trump supporters is not good journalism. It's good entertainment, but there's so many, even more so, of Americans, normal Americans, who are doubting the election and all that stuff.
Right.
That the major media won't talk about. There's millions of them, and they're showing up at the rallies. So this is too dismissive of Trump and on a conspiracy angle. The people have caught up to Trump, if he was right. So this is a bit dated now, this article. Quite dated, maybe. You could get away with this last year, maybe, but not this year.
Yeah, Trump is probably going to run again. I'm not sure if he'll get the nomination this time.
Nothing's going to happen. That's not going to happen. But here's the scenario: is that Sidney will get in there, and they'll just hate each other, ignore it, you know, insult each other. But then that'll mean she can charge them. She's going to get them into court, and then she's going to release all the documents that she has, real stuff. That'll cause a constitutional crisis, and they'll have a convention of states, and then maybe after that, that gets bogged down into a constitutional convention. But out of it, and this is what Trump wants to get, is he'll be viceroy of the new feudal situation that'll happen to America after they got rid of the Supreme Court and all these Congress and all that, which is not being taken seriously by Americans now. So I think it's Trump doesn't want to be president. He knows that's an obsolete function. He wants to be viceroy. So that's the inside story of what he's about, what he's hoping for. Not that he'll get it, but don't think in terms of him running or whatever. Things will be too fucked up by November. So that's what we can look forward to. And Mark can think that this is more conspiracy stuff, but he ain't seeing what's coming.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm lucky you have, Bob. Thanks for keeping us in the loop on the coming future. That's my job here. Yeah, thanks.
But I think the problem is this article is pretty dated. What does Mark think now, you know, in light of all that's happened?
Let's see. Has he... If I click his name... Let's see if he's written anything else on LitHub since then. Twitter, intense tweet. Does he have a Twitter account? No, this is the last thing he wrote on this website.
Great.
Everything else is about gay stuff. Edward Gorey, Frank O'Hara, and Harvard's Gay Underground. John Giorno, fighting the battle of gay liberation in a homophobic world. Okay.
Is that what he wrote? I know, John.
That's what he wrote. Those are the other three articles he has on this website. If you click his name.
Okay. Yeah, I'll go over there. That sounds interesting. He says that John Giorno, who was gay, he was Warhol's lover when Warhol, like in 63, 64, was filming his buddies sleeping for 24 hours.
Okay.
That's what John was, one of the sleepers. John Giorno. And John Giorno was a good friend of Jim George, who was the ambassador to everywhere and insider with the Dalai Lama, who told Carolyn about Mir in New York. That's how we got there in 93. It was due to Jim having the goods on Walter Fishman, the inventor. And he was a really good friend of John Giorno.
When you say
and
really
John Giorno, he asked me, I told him about what we're doing, and he'd heard it. He says, well, why don't you give it away for free?
Oh.
That was his help, street level, beatnik, Burroughs Bunker attitude.
Yeah, right on.
You know, the Burroughs Bunker. That
so
gang.
When are we getting our free drops, Bob?
No, that's beer. You got people, factories, you'd have to get them to give it away for free. Making of it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for doing a bit more of the article.
Glad to. It is good.